light beer, diet cola, the Vancouver Canucks. It's hard for him to decide which one he hates the most. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're still hearing radio silence from all corners regarding Bob McCowan's report on Wednesday that Paul Beeston will indeed return for one more year to be president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. And also about Shai Davidi's suggestion that a position may be created between Beeston's and that of general manager Alex Anthopoulos, which would allow Dan Duquette to join the organization at some point in the next few weeks, thus positioning him to replace Beeston in 2016, or maybe even Anthopoulos, or both, if the Blue Jays aren't a factor in the postseason. As far as we know, Beeston is still scheduled to address season's ticket holders on February 5th at that state of the franchise function. And so I think this is a pretty good time to talk about the Paul Beeston saga, the Paul Beeston situation, wherever you want to describe it, from a different angle, and maybe remove some of the emotion and some of the knee-jerk reaction from, you know, from the anti-Rogers media mob. You know, look, Dan Duquette has made it clear that he is interested in the Blue Jays job. He's told people here that. He's told people in Baltimore that. The Blue Jays are interested in him. That has never been disputed. And I guess Orioles owner Peter Angelos could keep Duquette around for the remaining, what, 3 or 4 years of his contract if he thinks it's good to take advice from a guy who doesn't want to be there. But that doesn't seem smart, and while I have some issues with Peter Angelos, I don't think he's that much of a, I don't think he's that much of a dummy that he would do that. Could it be that Angelos eventually lets Duquette go and gets less in return from the Blue Jays than he could have received right now, or maybe even nothing? Absolutely. Would you want a guy who doesn't want to be your general manager being your general manager? I don't think so. So the time to make a move on this for Peter Angelos is probably better now than it's going to be at any point. Look, let's face it. Nothing Blue Jays ownership does or could do with Beeston was going to be smooth. Now, much has been made about the approaches made to Jerry Reinsdorf about Kenny Williams and how silly it was to talk to Beeston's best friend. Well, okay then. How would you have done it? There is no way to talk to the White Sox about Kenny Williams, who is on a lot of teams' radar as far as a president and CEO goes. There's no way to talk to the White Sox about it without Beeston finding out from Reinsdorf. I mean, there just isn't. You know, and there are people out there who are saying, well, Beeston should have a role in the search. All right. Remember what happened the last time he led the search to find a president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays? He recommended himself. Look, let's be clear. Let's be brutally honest. This is as much about finding an eventual replacement for Anthopoulos if the season goes pear-shaped as it is about finding a successor for Beeston, whose role could very well end up morphing into being one of CEO of the Rogers Center with little input into payroll or business decisions for the baseball team. That's where this is going. Doesn't matter when or if Dan Duquette is hired. If this team doesn't go to the playoffs and Dan Duquette is here, he's going to eventually be general manager of the team. They'll hire somebody else to run the stadium and run the business aspect of the team. In fact, I'd say it's more about that. It's more about the general manager's job than anything. And you know what? Why wouldn't this organization look at a guy like Duquette? He's taken the Orioles to the postseason twice in the past 3 years. 3 years or 4 years. He's got a payroll that was $30 million less than the Blue Jays. He has a knack of cobbling together pitching staffs with gum and twine. And he does this even when he has his own expensive flops like Ubaldo Jimenez. Look, I love the Beast as much as the next guy. But the truth is, this was never going to be a neat and tidy exit unless it came after a World Series win. Anything else was going to be seen as a retreat or failure. It's tough to get rid of a guy who doesn't want to go and has a lot of friends and a lot of currency to make it uncomfortable for you. We will, of course, stay on top of this story. As I said, I don't think it's played out yet. The Toronto Blue Jays winter caravan continues. The caravan, or the winter tour as they call it, is in Calgary. Aaron Sanchez, still considered a starting pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, will join us at 10:30. We'll get his take on the winter tour and his preparations for the coming season. We'll ask him. Starter or reliever? But until we get to Aaron Sanchez, we're going to bring in one of our favorites. He is an integral part of our Blue Jays radio broadcast. He is the man you vent to, or vent with, or vent at, or vent alongside after Blue Jays games. He's Mike Wilner, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. And you, Mike, you're en route to a function, I understand.
I am. It's true, and I have company. I'm en route to the St. Thomas Sports Spectacular in support of the Special Olympics. I'm honored to be emceeing it for the first time. Tom Cheek did it for the first 12 years. Jerry Howard did it for the last 20. And now they've asked me, so it's an incredible honor. And I'm on my way up there. I'm taking Danny McManus with me. Butch Carter's going to be there. Tim Raines is going to be there. Daniel Norris, Devin Travis, Jamie Soleil, Greg Simpson, Mick Foley. It's an amazing roster.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Is Norris driving up there in his van?
No.
In the Shaggin' Wagon? Do they still call it Shaggin' Wagons? We used to call them Shaggin' Wagons.
I don't believe they do.
Okay.
When I'm talking about Daniel Norris's van, I refer to it as the Mystery Machine.
The Mystery Machine.
But he flew in yesterday and drove out to St. Thomas last night.
He always strikes me as if he'd be perfect for a role as an extra in a Scooby-Doo movie.
Yeah.
Daniel Norris. Exactly. All right. Well, we were talking a little bit about Beeston. I was talking about it at the top of the hour. You know, of course, you heard McCowan's comments yesterday. And again, I think, you know, Bob doesn't get those from the guy who parks the car. Let's put it that way. Those aren't his sources. What do you think? Where do you think this ends up going? Because I'm still hearing things from people in Baltimore, and I'm sure you're hearing things. Dan Duquette and the Orioles, they've reached a point where it's an unworkable relationship. I mean, that's the only way to put it. And at some point he's going to be here. And I think, you know, Mike Shy's talked about the possibility of creating a position to get him in here. I think that may be on the table.
I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. I mean, I think it's a good idea that Shy had about, you know, you make a president of baseball operations. A lot of teams have that. You look at Andrew Friedman, Theo Epstein, guys like that. They're all presidents of baseball operations. There are presidents of business operations as well, CFOs and whatever. But, you know, I heard what you said off the top and talking about why would the Orioles want to have a guy who doesn't want to work there. But Peter Angelos, I think, you know, we're kind of, I don't know, maybe thinking that he might be mellowing in his old age, and I don't think that's happening. Peter Angelos is a really vindictive guy from everything that I've heard about him. And he's got Dan Duquette under contract for another 4 years. And, you know, I was on the radio in Baltimore yesterday, the guy on Baltimore radio said that he thinks Angelos would rather just lock him in the cellar and have him file stuff in the basement for 4 years and keep paying him rather than letting him leave. And if that's at all true, then, you know, I can't imagine Duquette ever being let out of this contract. If he does get bought out of the contract, I'm sure there's a non-compete in it that says he can't work for another major league team until the contract expires. And Angelos, who is suing like everybody right now, would almost certainly do whatever he could do to prevent Dan Duquette from getting another job in Major League Baseball before he doesn't own him anymore.
Mike, I think the thing here, and you're right, he is suing everybody, and that's part of the issue here, is I think this process has kind of gotten balled up in a couple of things. First of all, we know now that the old guys, the old gang of owners that were right there alongside Bud Selig, I mean, they've been basically thrown out by Rob Manfred. The executive committee now, ain't Jerry Reinsdorf isn't on it. Tom Werner isn't on it. that whole sort of cadre of owners, most of whom, by the way, who tried to work against Rob Manfred replacing Bud Selig. I mean, they're not in the ascendancy anymore. They've been replaced by another group of owners. I think this is all about the mass and television agreement more than anything else. And I think maybe Angelos views this in some way as some sort of leverage. And you're right, he's suing everybody. He's a vindictive SOB. His kids are vindictive SOBs. But you know what? At some point, I just think this year, I think Dan Duquette's going to be in Toronto unless he doesn't want to come here. Unless something's happened, he doesn't want to come here. I think he's going to be in Toronto. And, I mean, I'll go further, and I think if the Blue Jays don't make the playoffs this year, I think he's going to be the next GM of the team.
Yeah, I don't, you know, the Angelos factor aside, I think you're right, but I think Angelos plays a pretty big part in all this stuff. He doesn't seem like a guy who just postures. So I wonder, and it's too bad. You know Dan Duquette a lot better than I do, back from the Montreal days. I'm sure he wants the position. I'm sure he wants to be president of a major league team. Who wouldn't? Especially someone who's worked in the game for so long. I just think that Peter Angelos may wind up doing whatever. And honestly, it's not a bargaining chip to Major League Baseball that he'll say, well, I'll let this guy go to be president of the Blue Jays. What does Rob Manfred care who president of the Blue Jays is?
Well, I think he cares because this sets a precedent. And you know one thing about baseball executives, they do like to look after each other. And if you've got an owner preventing another individual from moving into a position or getting a promotion with another organization, you're going to have all hell breaking loose. And
right,
the one thing you know about Rob Manfred, we don't know yet exactly what type of a commissioner he's going to be compared to Bud Selig, but Bud Selig hated disorder, and Rob Manfred hates disorder as much as him.
Yeah, and Bud Selig was phenomenal at building a consensus,
right,
not announcing anything until it was 30-0 or whatever.
And if this doesn't happen, then you have effectively thrown a wrench into accepted baseball practice for the past 60 or 70 years. And that will not be allowed to stand.
But I wonder how much this one rogue owner, how much of a bargaining chip he holds with, as far as the Masson lawsuit and all the other lawsuits and all of that stuff for give and take. But we'll see. I mean, you're right that if the Blue Jays don't make the playoffs or at least get even closer than they did last year, I think that Alex Anthopoulos will be out of a job. Duquette seems like the guy they want to be in here, so why wouldn't they want him to be in here in whatever capacity? But I don't think he could be brought in as president and general manager. I think that's a little too much. But I think the Blue Jays are going to be all right this year, and hopefully it doesn't happen, because I'd like to see Alex hold on to that job. I think given what he's had to work with, he's done a pretty good job.
Yeah, my understanding is if they don't make the playoffs, not just get close, if there is not a playoff game in Toronto, he gone. That's my understanding of the situation for people.
And that may be what people are telling you, but I think that's pretty short-sighted. There are all kinds of things that can happen on the way over the course of 162 games that can, nothing should ever be that cut and dry.
We're going to disagree about that. I think it has to be cut and dry if you're not making the playoffs after 4 or 5 years. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be bloodthirsty about it, but I think it's got to be that cut and dry. You're right. I mean, look, we'll see. We'll see. But I think the obvious thing is that right now, at least with that state of the franchise function coming up, or the state of the French fries, as you described it, which is still one of the best names ever for anything, Beeston's going to be the guy up there. I want to ask you this because I know you have talked to fans an awful lot. Let's just leave the Beeston stuff aside for a minute. What do you think most concerns Blue Jays fans right now?
Wow, that's kind of a loaded question.
And I know
they haven't been in the playoffs for 20 years, I think, is the biggest concern.
Right.
But I think when fans vent and complain over the course of the winter, it tends, and I think this holds for all fan bases, not just the Blue Jays, it tends to be, well, how come we got this guy? Why didn't we get that guy? Why didn't we make that trade? Why didn't we sign that free agent? And you know, like I remember back on the non-tender day, which was in early December, I think, maybe late November, mm-hmm. where 38 guys got non-tendered and became free agents. I got a tweet of every single one of those 38 guys from different people saying the Blue Jays should sign that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what, you know, when, well, not Zach Duke, but when David Robertson signs with Houston, why would he come to Houston and not Toronto? Or, things like that. Why haven't the Blue Jays signed a closer yet? And what's going on? And you know, it amazes me how quickly it can turn, because in November you get Josh Donaldson, you make the Saunders trade, you bring in Russ Martin, and everyone's, you know, everyone's mm-hmm. back on the Alexandropoulos bandwagon again. But a month later, it's, why have the Blue Jays done anything this winter?
Mike Wilner in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. The Jays we know have, are talking to relievers. There's still a lot of free agent relievers out there. I mean, there's some closers out there, as a matter of fact. What names
well,
are you?
There are two good closers still out there.
Right. What names are you hearing, Mike, as far as the Blue Jays? Because you were pretty. I mean, they were involved in Jason in Motti or Mott. They've been involved in some guys, in Luke Gregerson, guys who've gone elsewhere. What other names are you hearing right now?
They were involved in Mott, but only at about like a third of what he wound up signing for.
Right.
The Cubs, which is, you know. We keep hearing Axford. Nothing's happened yet with John Axford, and the longer nothing happens, the longer, you know, you think maybe he might be willing to take less for a minor league deal.
I think we just lost Mr. Wilner on the cell phone en route to St. Thomas. That would be my guess. So what we've got is Mike Wilner driving up to St. Thomas with Danny McManus for a sports function, fundraising event. And sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds like a pretty good group. Daniel Norris will be there. Tim Raines will be there. Mick Foley, author in addition to wrestler. We're probably not going to be able to get Wilner. Oh, he's back.
I'm back.
Because I've been, you're back. There you go. We only got you for a couple more minutes, Mike, then I promise I'll let you run. Continue your thoughts about the relievers.
What was the last thing you heard?
The last thing I heard was you telling me that the Jays were going to make a trade for Drew Storen.
Right. Well, I talked a little bit about Axford and Alexi.
Oh, that's where you were. Too. Right.
You know, I know that the Blue Jays have had interest in Agondo in the past, and he's out there and he's apparently healthy, but the Red Sox and Dodgers are hot on his tail too. Francisco Rodriguez and Rafael Soriano are both still sitting there on the free agent market, and I wonder about them. I think they probably priced themselves outside what the Blue Jays are looking to spend for reliever, but they're still sitting out there on the market. We heard yesterday that some rumblings about Burke Badenhop, who has pitched for the Rays, and a couple of other teams. He's a ground ball guy.
I was going to say he's an extreme ground ball guy, yeah. Isn't he?
And I don't know if you want an extreme ground ball guy when Jose Reyes is your shortstop,
mm-hmm.
but it's better than a fly ball guy at Rogers Center. So he's not a back of the bullpen. You know, he's not a closer type either. Casey Jansen's still sitting there. I don't see him coming back, but he's still sitting there. And there are guys who I mentioned even back at the winter meetings, like Nick Massett and Mike Adams, who may be available for very, very low-risk contracts who the Blue Jays could bring in. But I'm with you. I think that Aaron Sanchez is going to wind up being their closer. And I'm going to talk to Daniel Norris today in St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy who might wind up being the fifth starter after it's all said and
done. Oh, yeah, I think that I absolutely believe the door is opening for Daniel Norris. Listen, Mike, it was great of you. It was great of you to do this. Thanks so much. Have a great time in St. Thomas. It sounds like a terrific event.
It really does.
And please say hi to Danny McManus for us.
I will.
All righty. Take care, Mike.
All right.
It's Mike Wilner of our Blue Jays broadcast crew. Man, I covered the CFL so much. I covered McManus when he first came into the CFL. He's a good dude. And it sounds like I said, it sounds like a great event in St. Thomas. And I'm sure Mike will do a terrific job as MC of that event. A great head table and for a good cause, obviously. You heard Mr. Wilner mention the name Aaron Sanchez. People are finally coming around to my side. I've been saying since last year that I think this guy is going to be the Blue Jays closer. I was saying my assumption was that the Blue Jays would kick tires and some expensive closers or some guys with closers pedigree. They would come up short. They would end up bringing a bunch of arms into camp, maybe even bring in a guy like Rafael Soriano, maybe bring in a guy who is closed at different times. I still think it's going to end up with Aaron Sanchez pitching the ninth inning. That's just me, though. Now Mike Wilner as well. Let's see what Aaron Sanchez has to say about this. Aaron Sanchez of the Toronto Blue Jays will join us from Calgary, where the Blue Jays winter tour is underway. I'm going to talk a little baseball with Aaron Sanchez, Blue Jays starter, Blue Jays closer. We'll find out. It's a Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, yeah. The Fan.
Hey, yeah.
Discuss the Toronto Raptors loss to the Memphis Grizzlies last night. I'm forecasting a loss tomorrow night in Philadelphia. Not really. Loss to the Memphis Grizzlies last night with Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst, at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. And I'll attempt to talk you people off the ledge when it comes to the Raptors. I'm really getting frustrated by some of the dialogue I'm hearing around the Toronto Raptors right now. I guess a lot of you did think that they were going to win 75 games after all. So we'll talk to Jonesy about that. I think actually last night's loss to the Grizzlies, I saw way more positive signs out of that than negative signs. I think this team is probably not going to get too many games where Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and Gravis Vasquez go 10 of 42. Just call me guilty of being overly optimistic. But a six-point loss on the road to one of the best teams in the NBA when Lowry, DeRozan, and Vasquez hit, 25% of their shots? Yeah, I might not be calling that a trend. So we'll deal with that with Paul Jones. John Shannon joins us as well. He is, of course, our Hockey Central analyst. We'll preview tonight's BMO CHL Top Prospects game from St. Catharines. And we'll get John Shannon's take on that. But before we do that, the Toronto Blue Jays winter tour is currently underway. They have a bunch of the players in Calgary, Alberta. One of those is Aaron Sanchez. Aaron Sanchez, who is described on my sheet as starting pitcher, Toronto Blue Jays. You can follow him on Twitter at @A_Sanch41. The Twitter handle won't change. I'm not entirely certain that the description of Aaron Sanchez as a starting pitcher won't change, but let's find out. We'll talk to Aaron Sanchez, who joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Aaron, thanks a lot for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
How many times have you been asked whether you're going to start or close in the last, week?
It's been quite a few, but I take it with stride. Answer the best way I could possibly get.
And what is the best way you can possibly answer that?
I'm going into spring training, trying to make 30 starts this year. And mm-hmm. if something changes, that's up to the front office, obviously. I would like to start, but I understand the situation. We got a good team this year, and we got a chance to win a lot of ball games. And if that means me pitching at the back end of the bullpen, helps this team win more games, and obviously that's what I'm here to do.
Now, what might that mean for you, Aaron, in terms of spring training? I mean, then the Jays, and we should tell people, I mean, the Jays have been clear that Alex Anthopoulos has been clear that he envisions you as a starter, and you're going to show up in spring training, and you'll be working with the starting pitchers. What would that mean to you, though, if a decision was made either halfway through spring or early in spring, or maybe before you get down there, that, you know what, we're going to have to use Aaron Sanchez as a starter? What would that mean to you fundamentally in terms of what you would be doing at spring training?
I mean, I don't think really anything changes if they were to name me a starter, like you said, halfway or before anything even happens. I've done that my whole life in the minor league, so I've got a pretty good routine on what to do, but you never start, so that doesn't really change that much. I mean, if you go everything backwards, I think that would be where you find a little bit of change. You know, I've never really come out of the bullpen. I did for, you know, the 2.5 months at the end of the season last year. But I think I'm in good enough shape to do both. So, like I said, it's just up to them on what they want to do.
What did you learn about yourself last year when you were put into that role at the back end of the bullpen? And had a lot of success. Did you learn anything about yourself as a competitor and maybe even as a pitcher?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you know, you got a young kid coming up to the big leagues. You don't really know how it's going to perform, so to speak. And next thing you know, I find myself in the one-run ball games almost every time out. But that's what I live for. Seriously, I'd rather have the game in my hands than in anybody else's. So for me, I learned just to go out there and attack these guys. It's the same game that I played all growing up, but just on a bigger stage in front of more people.
Aaron Sanchez in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. Is it different in the off season when you know that you are expected, whether it's as a starter or a closer, you are expected to be on the 25-man roster? Is it different for you in terms of how you prepare yourself for the rigors of spring training, whether it's mentally or physically, or do you have the same routine that you've used in the past couple of years?
Absolutely. I don't think anything changes. I mean, you go into the off season working hard to get ready for another 162 games the following year. So I don't think much changes in the off season. Obviously, you know, everything's pushed back a little bit this year, so you start things a little later. That might be the only difference, but the way in terms of how I work out and go after the daily business, nothing really changes.
What do you do as far as working out goes, Aaron? Are you a guy that works a lot in your legs? Are you a stamina guy? Are you somebody who, you know, sort of more interested in maintaining flexibility? Or how do you approach a workout?
Yeah, so for me, I've got long limbs, super lanky. It's always been hard for me to keep weight on, so I try to crush my legs. Core is a big thing for me. I try to do yoga 2 to 3 times a week. I do upper body stuff. Not so much the long, lanky leanness that I've got, the nice, easy arm action. I try to keep that as long as I can. So I try to stay, you know, very light with the upper body, but get enough in to where I feel strong enough going into the year.
Who do you work out with? Like, are you down in Florida working out with a bunch of guys, or do you have, you know, friends in back in California you work out with, or a personal trainer?
Yeah, so I had a personal trainer that I worked out with in California, and right after the new year, I headed to Florida and down there working out with our guys and getting ready for, you know, kind of adjusting to the humidity and get my lawn sauce in. There's catchers down there, so when we start throwing bullpens, it's super convenient. So it's been nice.
Aaron Sanchez in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. Who else is down in Florida with you?
Well, you guys are going to laugh, but me and Marcus are down there together.
Okay.
I think Norris is down there.
Mm-hmm.
Hutch lives in Tampa, so we see Hutch. I've run across Batista a couple times, obviously being a Tampa native.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just a few guys here. I know there's some young guys there that are coming off some injuries that are working out there, but for the most part, it's just us four.
Because you spent the last part of the the season in the bullpen. And I talked to you about this in the clubhouse one day, and I think I kind of know what your answer is going to be, but I think the callers or the listeners might be interested in it. When you can come into a game and it's a one-run game and you're in the situation where you're closer, you don't have a lot of time to experiment. You don't have a lot of time to see whether or not this pitch is working today or not.
Right.
How do you have any concern that some of your, I'm going to call them, I don't know, secondary pitches, I hate that phrase, but some of the pitches, maybe your off-speed pitches or some of your pitches other than the fastball might not be as fine as they've been in the past. How do you, and do you have to compensate for that when you throw, between appearances?
Right. Absolutely. You come into a run-run game, you're trying to get as many outs as you can, as fast as you can, and that's what my mentality was when I was out there. So you got a pretty good idea of what things are like when you're down in the bullpen, whether that be your fastball is not doing what you want it to do, it's not where it needs to be, your curveball, changeup, same. But I think, last year being such new to the role, I think if I were to get put back in this role, everything would be a lot more sharp. I'd have an understanding of when I'd be able to get off the mound to keep those things sharp.
Aaron, you're going to have a chance to work with Russ Martin. He will be the everyday catcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. He's got a reputation, obviously, as a very good pitch framer, a very good defensive catcher, a real infield general. Have you had a chance to talk to him at all? Has he shown up in Florida? And how much are you looking forward to working with a guy like that?
I have not actually come across Martin. I'm actually going to meet him out in Vancouver
here
in a couple days, so I'm excited about that. But, yeah, I mean, I've heard nothing but good things about Russ. I mean, he's been around the game for a long time, has a lot of information. Like you said, he's one of the best in game calling and pitch framing. So, I mean, what is there not to like about that?
Aaron, I'm going to let you run and enjoy the rest of the day. You guys still in Calgary?
We're in Banff, headed back to Calgary for a banquet and then off to Vancouver later on this afternoon.
Man, you got the good part of the tour. Calgary, Banff.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been fun, man.
And Vancouver? It'll be great.
You don't realize how many fans you got out here that don't really get to come out to Toronto. So it's nice to come out of here and see all these fans out here on the West Coast.
Well, continue to have a good time. Travel safely. We'll look forward to seeing you in Florida in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. That is Aaron Sanchez of the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm saying Aaron Sanchez, closer, because I've been saying it all along. And I'll go down with guns blazing, because I think that's the way it's gonna work out. And it's funny, I had a conversation a couple of days ago with a guy in the Blue Jays organization, and we were talking about this whole thing, and I said, I keep hearing from people that the pitchers are going to say it's no big deal because they just want to win. And there isn't a pitcher out there who, if you said to him, here's your options, kid, you can be in the major league bullpen or you can be starting in the minors. There isn't a pitcher out there who would rather start in the minors over being in the bullpen. But I talked about this guy and said, how much of the impact of this on Aaron Sanchez? Because it's pretty clear that he's one of the best arms the Blue Jays have. He's had difficulty third and fourth time through against lineups. But, I mean, that's nothing that with his arsenal, with his repertoire, that's nothing that can't be addressed. And so I asked this guy, how much of a problem would it be for this kid if he closes for the Jays this year, and then next year something happens and the Jays make a move and they get another starting, or they get a closer in, and now they can move Aaron Sanchez back to the bullpen. And I said, how much of a setback would it be for this kid to do that role this year, to close this year and then have to go back and start next year? And you know this whole thing about baseball, right? How guys used to break into the majors by starting out in the bullpen. It's how Henkin did it. It's how all these guys did it back in the day. You started out in the bullpen. You gradually built up your arm strength. You figured a few things out about facing major league hitters, about the major league lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera. Boom, then you went into the rotation. And this is a guy that I've known in the organization for a long time who has been absolutely 100% certain that Aaron Sanchez is going to close from the second the organization drafted the guy. He's just thought this guy's closer's makeup, and he still thinks he's closer's makeup. But he said one thing about this kid is I think he is one of those kids that wouldn't at all be affected by it. The biggest thing he would have to do is adjust his routine in order to keep command of some of his other pitches. Because as Aaron said, clearly, if you go into the game as a closer, you're not going to screw around. You're not going to be interested in get me over pitches. You're going to come into the game. The game's going to be on the line, and it's going to be on you to shut it down. Well, you're not going to experiment. You're not going to, oh, let's see if this works. Oh, well, that one didn't. Tie game. And this guy said that he absolutely has enough confidence that Aaron Sanchez will be able to figure out how to walk that line. He'll keep command of some of his off-speed pitches and his secondary pitches and still have the fastball. So, but again, we'll see where it goes. The offseason is still young. There's still a couple of closers out there. Rafael Soriano, Francisco Rodriguez. I think Rodriguez is a Scott Boras client, so that's probably not going to happen. Paul Beeston generally doesn't do business with Scott Boras clients. So, again, unless Alex has a trade in mind, which we haven't seen yet, I just think that spring training, very early, it's going to become apparent that this guy is the best option for the Toronto Blue Jays. And we do appreciate Aaron Sanchez joining us. He is, like I said, the one thing about this organization, they have so lucked out with Stroman, Sanchez, Norris, and Hutchison, because in addition to being good pitchers and having good stuff, they're four really good kids. And we look forward to seeing Aaron Sanchez and talking to Aaron Sanchez in spring training. So we got a few minutes left. I want to throw open the phone lines and talk and get your take on the Paul Beeston situation. And just going to ask you, do you think it's done now? I mean, you heard McCowan's comments yesterday that Beeston's back for 2015. I was going to say Bob's your uncle, but he's not. He's your talk show host. Beeston's back for 2015 as president and CEO of the organization, and somebody else will replace him in 2016. Are you buying that? 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Do you think it's a done deal? Or do you think there's still a chance that Duquette gets involved in this? And how do you, is it at all, I'm going to ask this, is it at all a setback for the organization or a bad reflection on the organization? See, I don't think it necessarily reflects badly on anybody. It was going to be hard to get rid of Paul Beeston unless the Jays won the World Series. I mean, it just was. It wasn't going to be an easy exit to plan. And you see that a lot with organizations, especially when somebody comes back to that organization when they've had a little bit of success there. The hell's an exit strategy? How do you have an exit strategy for that? I don't think you do. Tom in Waterloo, Earn Sports and F590 The Fan. What's up, Tom?
Hey, just listening, Jeff. Toronto's biggest problem is if you don't win in 3 to 5, you fire everybody and you start all over again. Look at the Leafs. Look at the Jays. I'm sorry. I went down to GMs. Kansas City's in their ninth year. Pirates 8. Washington 7. Like those guys are just getting their returns on whatever they were doing. Tigers 14 years. Yanks 18. Billy Bean 8. Another 18. Saban, Giants 20. You can't keep rotating the top.
Tom, it's a great point. It's something that has happened in baseball. Boy, in the last 10 years, there has been so much stability in the general manager's position in every organization, not just winning organizations, but every organization. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think part of the reason for that is it's a longer process to develop players in baseball than any other sport. And if you draft a guy, if I'm the GM of a team and I draft player X, I'm probably prepared to wait 4 years for player X to turn into a good player because that's what it takes. Now, if another general manager comes in 3 years, you know, and he's looking at this player and this is the guy that the guy before him drafted and he's not ready for the majors yet, you may not get the same point of view. And, you know, you throw out Brian Sabian's name. Do you know how many times I've been writing baseball since 1989? The number of times I read stories about Brian Sabian's job is in jeopardy. Boy, the Giants, they're just not moving forward fast enough. They don't have enough good young players. Brian Sabian's been almost fired more often than he's won the World Series. And you're right, you can't exist that way. The difference here, I think, Tom, is there is a sense amongst ownership and a sense amongst Blue Jays fans to some degree, but more among a sense in ownership that they're kind of banging their head against a wall right now. You know, they've put the payroll up. You know, they've signed off on some big contracts. They've done all this, and they're getting no return as far as championships go. And I think this is an organization, and this is an ownership that expects returns. And I think that may be the difference.
Okay, one difference, though, here is the large contracts, they're ending soon. Like, they're not for the next 10 years or 7 years.
Well, with the exception, I guess, of Reyes, as you're right, they're a couple of years. They're a couple of years down the road.
Yeah. Okay, we got Reyes for 3, and Martin is split out over 5. But the beauty of it is, if you go down the list on the cutoffs and everything, he loses 2 to 3 each year if he so desires. I mean, it's not that bad a setup compared to some of the other ones I've seen.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree with you in that. I just think, though, I think this ownership group really wants to win. And they want to win now. And I think that's why Dan Duquette is so attractive to them in some capacity, is because this is the guy who's won, or at least come closer to winning. And he's showing that he can do it with a cost-effective lineup. You know, and I keep mentioning this, in addition to having a lower payroll than the Blue Jays, it's not as if every move the Baltimore Orioles have made has you know, worked out. Baldo Jimenez didn't work out. They've kind of bobbed and weaved around for closers for a while. So Dan Duquette's been able to win on a smaller payroll and still make mistakes. And I think that is particularly attractive to this ownership group, because this ownership group is sitting there saying, okay, you know, we get hammered all the time because we only have $130 million payroll, which is, I think it's around 10th in the league, 10th, 11th, 12th. We keep getting hammered for this publicly and, you know, in the media and by fans. We keep getting hammered for this. But here's this guy who has taken his team to the playoffs, or has been general manager of a team that's gone to the playoffs a couple of years. He's got like a $90 million payroll. I think 1 year there was probably 110. I mean, how could that not be attractive to ownership? That's my question. I think it should be. Chris in Kitchener, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Jeff. Pleasure talking to you.
Good talking to you, Chris.
I don't think it's over, and I'd love to see Duquette here. I think he'd be a great addition to the team. But I think that's dependent upon the compensation that Baltimore asked for. I saw one report last week, and I believe it was out of Baltimore, that was saying that one of either the Jays' first-round picks last year, Hoffman or Pendergast, are in play as compensation.
No.
And if that is the case, I think that is absolutely ridiculous, and you'd never make that deal.
Well,
what your opinion is on what would be appropriate compensation.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. First of all, there was a report out there, Nick Cafardo of the Boston Globe, that a player who is on the 40-man roster can't be traded for an executive, which is bull. I talked to Pat Courtney at the Major League Baseball office. There's no limitations on the player that can or can't be moved, or the player that can or cannot be involved as compensation. It can be any player. I think a guy like Deonner Navarro might be the compensation. This idea that it's going to be two prospects, yeah, that's Peter Angelos' wishful thinking. I've also been told, and I have to admit I haven't had this confirmed, I've also been told that the commissioner's office frowns on money being exchanged. Now, I know people keep writing, well, it can be money, or it can be players. My understanding is the only money that can be exchanged is money from the international draft pool, which is already tradable. I mean, quite often you'll see, especially in the past couple of years, you'll see teams make a deal and they'll throw in for future considerations, it'll be, I don't know, $1.2 million out of the international draft pool. That money can be moved. I don't know I don't think it's simply a matter of, you know, Rogers cutting a check to the Baltimore Orioles to cover compensation for Dan Duquette. My understanding is it still has to be mainly a player. And I just, you know, I saw that report about Max Pentecost and Jeff Hoffman, and I mean, that's got to be right from the mouth of Peter Angelos and wishful thinking for Peter Angelos. Now, what I find interesting in all this, and now we're up against the clock, I'm going to make this really quickly. What I find interesting in all this is I wonder who's advising Peter Angelos on the compensation. I wonder, like, is Dan Duquette talking to Peter Angelos about what the compensation is going to be for Dan Duquette? Is Brady Anderson, who's kind of the go-between between Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter, handling that part of it? See, I think the issue here is the timing. This is going to be long. It's going to be complicated. And that's why I think that what we've seen the past couple of days is a realization that the Blue Jays are probably going to have Paul Beeston here to start the year. But the pursuit of Dan Duquette has not stopped. I can tell you that. It has not stopped. And I think Peter Angelos is in a position where basically he's coming very close to screwing himself, because he may be in a position where he doesn't get much, if any, compensation for Dan Duquette. You can't keep a guy with your organization if he wants to go elsewhere. Just can't be done. The Toronto Raptors lost to the Memphis Grizzlies last night, 92-86. Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Gravis Vasquez, 10-42. That won't happen very often. Relax, people. Paul Jones is a radio analyst for the Raptors on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Paul Jones is going to help me talk you off the ledge when the Jeff Blair Show returns on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.